Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Unconstitutional Vagueness and Retroactivity Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 30th, 2016, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Welch v. United States. Police entered Gregory Welch's apartment believing that a robbery suspect was on the premises, and after he consented to search, they located a gun and ammunition that Welch later identified as his own. He was subsequently arrested and pleaded guilty to being a felon in possession of a firearm. Because Welch had three prior felony convictions, the district court determined that the Armed Career Criminal Act required that he be sentenced to a minimum of 15 years in prison. Welch appealed, arguing that his conviction for robbery in Florida State Court did not qualify as a predicate offense for the purposes of ACCA because, at the time he was convicted, Florida State law allowed for a robbery conviction with a lower level of force than the federal law required to disqualify as a predicate offense. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, however, affirmed the district court's judgment, concluding that the minimum elements for conviction under the Florida law established a serious risk of physical injury to another, and therefore qualified it as a predicate offense for purposes of ACCA. Welch's subsequent attempt to obtain habeas relief from the district court was denied, and the 11th Circuit rejected his appeal, but the Supreme Court granted certiorari. The two questions before the Supreme Court are, 1. Whether Johnson v. United States, which held that the residual clause in the Armed Career Criminal Act of 1984 is unconstitutionally vague, announced a new substantive rule of constitutional law that is retroactively applicable in an initial motion to vacate a federal prisoner's ACCA-enhanced sentence under 28 U.S.C. 2255A, and 2. Whether petitioner's conviction for robbery under Florida state law qualifies as a violent felony that supports a sentence enhancement under the ACCA. To discuss the case, we have Richard E. Myers II, who is the Henry Brandis Distinguished Professor of Law, University of North Carolina School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Myers.
In Welch, the justices are trying to decide whether their 2015 holding in Johnson v. United States that certain provisions of the Armed Career Criminal Act were unconstitutionally vague applies retroactively on appeal. To understand the arguments in Welch, we first need to understand a little about Johnson's holding. Johnson examined the Armed Career Criminal Act, which increases sentences for certain felonies if the actor has a history of violent crime, from a statutory maximum of 10 years to a mandatory minimum of 15 years, with as much as life sentence available. Under the relevant provisions in Title 18, United States Code, Section 924E, any person who has three previous convictions for a violent felony or a serious drug offense, or both, committed on occasions different from one another, shall be fined and imprisoned not less than 15 years. At issue in Johnson was the meaning of violent felony. Under the statute, there are three ways a crime becomes a violent felony. First, it is named in the statute. Second, it meets a test that requires its elements to include the use, attempted use, or threatened use of physical force against the person of another. Or third, and important for our purposes, it qualifies under the so-called residual clause because it, quote, otherwise involves conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another, close quote. Johnson, one of the last opinions written by the late Justice Antonin Scalia, held that the residual clause was unconstitutionally vague because it did not provide courts with sufficient guidance to fairly apply the statute. It was clear that the provision could not be enforced going forward. Petitioner Welch, who had been sentenced before Johnson was decided, raised the question of whether the new rule was retroactive, such that it could be challenged on appeal in successive petitions for a writ of habeas corpus. Retroactivity review on appeal is a notoriously thorny issue under the court's existing precedent. In this case, oral argument focused on whether the new rule was substantive or procedural. As a general matter, procedural rules are not retroactive, substantive rules are. Counsel for Mr. Welch, Amir Ali, argued that the decision was substantive. The test he proposed was, assuming perfect trial or sentencing procedures, does the new rule change the authorized outcomes of the criminal process? If no, meaning that the court could have reached the same outcome had it applied perfect procedures, then we're dealing with a procedural rule. Because it could no longer reach the outcome in Welch's case, he argued, the rule had to be substantive. The justices were concerned with whether the court should look to the outcome of the rule, in this case meaning that Welch was found to be a career criminal under a provision that no longer applies, or to the constitutional source of the rule, the void for vagueness doctrine, which is at least arguably procedural. Ali argued that the outcome was determinative. By holding the residual clause facially unconstitutional, no one could be sentenced under a provision that had been struck, and that included the defendant Welch. It should be noted that Welch, like many people sentenced under the residual clause, might still qualify as an armed career criminal because he meets the elements test, but the lower court relied on the residual clause without determining whether that test was met. Unusually, the Solicitor General's office joined the defendant in arguing that Johnson constitutes a substantive decision that's retroactively applicable on collateral review. According to Assistant Solicitor General Michael Dreeben, arguing for the United States, what Johnson did was eliminate a substantive basis for imposing an enhanced sentence under the ACCA. It changes the question the sentence is answering from, did the defendant have a conviction that qualifies under the residual clause, to, did the defendant have a conviction that qualifies under the elements clause or the enumerated offenses clauses? In response to questioning from Justice Ginsburg, Mr. Dreeben noted that the defendant was relying on a syllogism based in the court's prior retroactivity jurisprudence to reach the conclusion that the rule was retroactive. All substantive rules are retroactive. Johnson is a substantive rule. Therefore, this court's jurisprudence makes Johnson retroactive. The government was trying to distinguish between a case such as Welch's, which defined the conditions under which he was eligible for an enhanced sentence, and similar provisions in the sentencing guidelines, which shape how a judge exercises her discretion at sentencing within the applicable guidelines range. The court need not decide that issue now, but it was an important marker that was dropped for future cases. Court-appointed amicus curiae Helgi Walker argued in support of the judgment below. Her principal point was that a new rule based on the central procedural guarantees of the Due Process Clause in either the Fifth Amendment or the 14th Amendment does not qualify as a substantive rule that could overturn a final criminal judgment. Her position was met with some skepticism from the bench. Justice Ginsburg asked, how can it not be substantive when, under one rule, the sentence range goes from a minimum of 15 years up to life, and the other reading, it's 0 to 10 years? I can't imagine anything more substantive than a minimum of five extra years in prison. Walker maintained that any ruling based on the void for vagueness doctrine was procedural, and that such rulings were constitutional rules, not statutory construction rules, which decided that certain conduct was not covered. On her reading, some people were properly convicted under the residual clause, notwithstanding the fact that it had been held to be facially unconstitutional. According to Helgel, we've moved well past any notion where a law that has been declared subsequently unconstitutional simply disappears, and we must all pretend it never existed. During rebuttal, an exchange between Mr. Ali and Justice Breyer got to the heart of the case. According to Justice Breyer, the provision, if struck, means that there is no substantive basis for holding someone in prison after 10 years. And the court was worried about the effects that might have on sentences handed down under similar guidelines provisions. Mr. Ali agreed with the government that this case was different. According to Ali, it's not simply a procedure or some sort of rule governing how you reach that sentence. It's that rare circumstance in which an actual substantive criterion which qualifies someone or makes someone eligible for the punishment authorized, which leads to the circumstance Your Honor described, which is that this person, the petitioner, is now spending time in prison which was not authorized by any valid act of Congress. This case will now be decided by an 8-member court. Given that Justice Scalia was the intellectual architect of Johnson, it is sad that he is no longer with us to let us know what he thought its effect should be.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.